There have been two major points of focus the GOP replacement for Obamacare has been placed under: content and cost. The debate over the content, yep, that's well underway, both in the House and the Senate. The debate over the cost brings with it an additional debate over the source for the cost determination, specifically the Congressional Budget Office. Obamacare supporters are praising the CBO for their so-called accuracy in estimating the costs of the GOP plan, even though that same CBO extremely overestimated the benefits of Obamacare. Here to offer his analysis of the debates going on regarding health care and its repeal, reform, replace, whichever you choose to call it, is the CEO of Asset Health and co-founder of One Nation Health, David Wilson. Thanks for being here today, sir.
Thank you. It's great to be with you.
And a couple of websites for you, onenationhealth.org and assethealth.com. And let's start with an overview of the GOP plan, because there are those on the Republican side who say this isn't a repeal, which brings back, well, you know, a recent history lesson. Obamacare was not installed in one solid document dump, I guess we could call it. So if you replace something in one shot that had been installed in increments, don't you run the risk of kicking more people to the curb intentionally or even unintentionally than you possibly need to?
Well, the American Health Care Act, as presented, you know, in the House by the leadership and passed through committee, is simply the first step in the process, and it is basically a step of of repealing core provisions of the Affordable Care Act, not all of it, because they cannot do that in the structure of reconciliation, which is the way that Congress is taking up their action so that it can pass in the Senate with 51 votes. So they're limited in this first kind of opening of the door from a legislative repeal and reform approach. It's really a three-stepped approach. So the first step is this first action in the House combined with the Senate action for passage. They obviously have to get the votes to do that. But then the second step is the regulatory reform headed up by the new Secretary of HHS, Tom Price. And then obviously there'll be more legislative action required after that, which will require 60 votes in the Senate. And so each of these steps are taken are going to be taken in a fairly methodical way. But during the period of time, there's a two-year transition, basically, that allows for everyone to maintain their existing coverage until all of these elements can be transitioned in so that it's theoretically a smooth process. And I say theoretically because there's nearly nothing the government does that's completely smooth.
And in a way, is this also shifting any organized health care program from being forcibly funded through the mandate into a more friendly environment for the insurance companies to either hang on if they're thinking of leaving or to come back in for the increasing number that continue to bail out of Obamacare?
Well, I mean, you know, the question here obviously is the reality that the Affordable Care Act is not working. And I think that's the reference here, right?
That correct.
There's the costs are going up and there's fewer options. And in some states going into next year, there'll be no option in particular counties or geographies under the exchange. Yes, the intention is to move away from, you know, a centrally defined high level of coverage that all of the insurance coverage mandates that the Affordable Care Act requires that drives up the cost. And obviously, some of the adverse selection factors that were embedded in the exchange and the way that they actually went about trying to secure coverage for the American people with pre-existing conditions that I could come in and out of the program at any time. So under the American Health Care Act, the objective is continuous coverage. So you avoid the pre-existing condition concern by trying to create a system in which, you know, all Americans have the opportunity to participate in coverage and maintain coverage. So the definition of benefits, the opportunity for continuous coverage, the ability to really truly choose your doctor, choose your plan, choose the level of coverage that you wish to participate in, is the hope is, the goal is to make that a more efficient and affordable market for each person in America. That's the goal.
And that's the foundation, and again, that's just coming out of the starting block. We're talking with David Wilson, the CEO of Asset Health, co-founder of One Nation Health, onenationhealth.org and assethealth.com are the respective websites, and you're listening to Issues and Ideas. And with that balance and with that opportunity, with the cost effectiveness and the more benefit for the insured, as well as being more inviting for the insurer, a lot of people are concerned about the 30% late enrollment, I guess they call it, late enrollment surcharge, calling that a mandate. Wouldn't that be a normal practice in day-to-day commercial insurance coverage?
Yes, it would be in historical terms, right? That if I don't come in at a particular point in time, and in the employer setting, for example, where you have a population of people and employees come and go, you avoid this issue of adverse selection. But in the open marketplace, people can potentially game the system. Not all of us who are actively supporting the need for reform. And I think it's important to understand that when you look back historically, the American healthcare system has been, in a state of reform since the 1940s. And it's been an undulating process of reform, and this is the next step in that process. But I would suggest that, all elements to try to stabilize the pricing for the American people are important. The 30% provision has the opportunity to do that. I'm not sure that's the ideal provision and the way to do that, but the reality is it would have some effect in accomplishing that. And we need to continue to search for the best ways to ensure that the American people have access to coverage for you and for all of us. And these provisions are an effort to do that, to stabilize the pricing.
I want to touch on the CBO because the opponents to the replacement plan are embracing strongly the CBO's declaration of death upon arrival of the plan, saying that it will leave 14 million more people without health care insurance, with the argument against that being, well, yeah, if you're not holding a gun to someone's head to make them take health care coverage, which they don't want in the first place, they're probably not going to take it. So they're sort of including the counting the corpses before the death happens.
Yeah. So this is an interesting thing, right? So you hear very little about the reality that the act actually reduces the deficit by $337 billion in the first 10 years of the American Health Care Act. That it saves another 0.9 trillion or 900 billion taxes, meaning that we, the American people, receive an economic benefit of about $1.2 trillion in the first 10 years of the act, which obviously, creates a great deal of economic empowerment, jobs, but also the ability for us to invest in our health, the ability to invest in our health care. And so as we talk about the CBO report and the loss of coverage, we seem to always go to the loss of coverage and not talk about the economic benefits. But let me go to the question, which is that for 14 million people to, remove themselves from coverage next year, on the face of it, seems a bit absurd. The reality is that 9.4 million people are under the exchange today. The Medicaid expansion after these multiple years of the Affordable Care Act being in place is about 11.2 million. So let's just call it, 20 million plus have gained access to health insurance, which is very, very good, right? I mean, in other words, the Affordable Care Act did work to help expand coverage to the American people.
Sure.
28 million Americans still have concluded that with the penalty in place, they'd rather pay the penalty than buy insurance, okay? But 20 million have moved on, right? And what it would mean for 14 million people to come off is it would mean that more than half the people that now have coverage under the exchange and or the Medicaid expansion would have to say, you know what, I was just kidding. I didn't really need insurance coverage, right?
Yeah.
And that's unlikely, especially since you have the two-year transition period in which those people, the people on Medicaid expansion and or the exchanges, are going to continue to receive the current benefits they receive today. So there's no question in my mind, as a guy in the healthcare space studying it for 35 years, I'm expecting that we may see actually a break even, no change, or actually an incremental increase in coverage by those people realizing that they have new opportunities and choices coming down the path, and they would rather get into their employer plan or employers expand coverage based upon choices that are going to be made available in the marketplace.
And you referenced the over $300 billion in savings through the replacement plan. Compare that with how the government spent some people want to take the CBO's gospel. Okay, we'll take the CBO's gospel. They say that the government spent $462 billion between 2014 and 2018 on subsidies and Medicaid expansion, only to end up cutting the number of non-elderly uninsured from 44.3 to only 41 million.
Right.
So you figure the cost per signee or enrollee, cost effectiveness does not even come into the picture there.
No. And that's the challenge, and the truth is that the American Health Care Act is a revolution on two fronts. One is it's saying, we're going to allow the American people to keep more of their money. And two is we're going to empower the American people to choose their doctor, choose their plan, choose their insurance coverage. And for those that believe in self-motivation, right, the idea certainly is that people from the right of center position believe that people will act in self-interest and gain coverage. So this is kind of the debate, right? And those that believe in central government control and penalties, that's the Affordable Care Act. Healthcare has to be unifying. It should be a unifying issue for the country. And it's obviously disappointing for all of us that it's such a divisive issue. And I do think the American Healthcare Act does present to the American people a strong next step in healthcare reform that will be good for the individual and good for all Americans.
Learn more about this issue at One Nation Health. On the web, it's onenationhealth.org. He is the CEO of Asset Health. They're found at assethealth.com. And co-founder of One Nation Health, David Wilson, thanks for being here today.
Thank you so much. It's great to be with you.